podcasting from the Sportique Studios, where 0-2 isn't just our record, it's our state of mind. This is the South Stands Denver Fancast.
Yeah!
I'm Colin Daniels with producer Scott Stafford, the Dean of Denver Talk Radio, Peter Boyle, and your host, John Reed.
Wow, we blew up those mics there.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, it's fun though.
Really fun.
Yeah, it's good times.
South Stands Denver Fancast.
Go big or go home.
Two shows in a row. Who wow. Could have thunk it? Hey, it is a privilege and an honor to have a legend with us. Peter Boyles is sitting in the studio. This is the most talent that's ever sat in this room, and we've sat here for like 250 fucking shows. So of all that time, of all the no talent, this is more talent than that's been.
This is great, fellas. This is the first one. I'm a cherry. It's the first podcast I've ever
done. That's kind of hard to believe. I figured maybe you had tested the waters by now.
No, I do a YouTube show, and I'm doing it. I do it once a week on a Wednesday, and I still do a Saturday gig, and I do a lot of fill-in work, and I still write. But I've never done one of these, and I've known you guys. Who had the hooligan?
That was me. Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Well, I was going to say. So you and I go way back. Yeah. I'm sure you go way back with Colin
everybody.
Too.
Colin
yeah, with everybody
too.
Here,
sure.
Scott
everybody here.
Too.
Yeah.
And you were always very kind and generous to us. And me and Aaron X, we did the hooligan way back when.
Yes.
And we you actually had us on your show once or twice. I know one time we rode our scooters down to like Morton's or one of those places downtown.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you were always very nice. And you even went so far as got us set up with we got to do like a Saturday, like 2 hours on like KOA or something. Do you remember this?
Of course I do.
And it was like, it was probably garbage. So
no.
It was probably really bad. But it was awesome. And I want to thank you for that. You're always super nice to us. And I don't know how you came to us, how you saw us, but you know, something, you saw something and thought you could give us a shot, but here we are.
I remember the mag being like the rebel publication that I always saw it as. And we were talking before the lights went on and turned the mics on that outlaw isn't necessarily an outlaw mindset, especially in this business, doesn't mean you're breaking the law. It just means you don't agree with much of what's happening. And I always saw you guys as that. I mean, that you guys were kind of, okay, we don't think what they're thinking. Well, when I hear or see that, that's always, you know, come on, sit down next to me.
Well, and really, Peter, that you've really touched on the reason that this podcast exists and does again. And that's that access determines the tone of most media when it comes to sports in Denver. And so if you have an outlet and you're reliant on access from Kroenke Sports and from the Broncos and these other organizations, then you've got to watch your P's and Q's. Otherwise, you're going to answer to their people.
And that's really no different than mainstream Republicanism or mainstream Democratic Party. You know, being the person that I am, that I never relied on friendships with those people. And in fact, I liked it when they didn't like me.
Sure.
I mean, you know, like not liking me. Back to pro wrestling, we were talking about being a heel. They don't like you. Good. And if the corporate teams don't like you, my hat's off to you.
Well, that's kind of it. And I know the Broncos, when we were like in our heyday a few years ago and really, really hammering it, the Broncos were kind of scared of Colin because Colin kept digging up dirt and they really they weren't really appreciative of him, which is great. That's what you want. You don't want that. I get it. People's jobs depend on, hey, I gotta pay the bills. I got to go cover the Broncos, but
the first time you get the phone call, don't say that about the governor.
Yeah.
The first time you get that, don't say that about the senator. And it's the motto is identical.
Well, and you've turned yourself into a bit of a lightning rod with the Trump people. I know that they're not fond of you.
No.
Well, good. That's what you want.
Yeah, well, that's my point.
That's exactly what you want.
That's what you want. You don't want, I mean, Nietzsche said, don't tell me who likes you. Tell me who does not like you, and then I will know who you are. You know, I can say, geez, my friend's in the business. Dave Logan is one of my closest friends. Joe Williams is a good friend. you know, even DMACC, who just got hacked. You know, DMACC's a friend, those guys. But there are other people that don't like me and don't like my work. Now you'll know who I am.
Exactly. And I think coming back to you giving us a chance to be on the radio, and we like... We had like the Partridge Family Temple on, and it was it was a big shit show. It was a total shit show. We were probably terrible. After that, we got in with Scott. Scott was doing internet radio, and we started doing that. And then slowly, I thought, I think we know how to do this, and then we ended up here. But I think the main thing is that that's how much it's changed. That back then, when we did the thing on KOA, it was like nobody was like, no, this is horrible. We're not going to go with this. But like that was basically what a podcast is now, essentially. And it's kind of like it's like it took that long for finally people to be able to do that on their own.
It's become clear to me that this is cutting edge where you guys are. And I've been invited to do another show. Interestingly enough, today I'm getting ready to come down and meet you guys. And I got a phone call. Would you do a podcast? My boss has been saying podcast. So for the last couple of weeks, I'm a huge Rogan fan. I think Joe Rogan does a great job, but there's like everything else. There's a lot of this out there, but there's a lot of really good out there. And so I think what you guys are doing here clearly is the cutting edge. It's the future of what's going to happen.
And is that the future for a guy like DMACC? And I'm glad you touched on that. It wasn't just him. It was Orlando Franklin, also Nate Jackson, and Chad Brown. All of them were eliminated on Monday, as you know. And I had a conversation this morning with the program director there, who is a friend of mine, Roz Sharon, trying to give some perspective as to why these things happen. But it's ironic because you and I were having a conversation on Saturday about Stephen Tubbs leaving, and he wanted to leave before he got chopped. And that's what he's telling his listeners is, listen, this is a brutal business. I wanted to make sure I was a step ahead of it. I didn't want to be chopped. I wanted to leave on my own volition.
He's going to do the YouTube show with me tomorrow morning at 10. He's actually texting me right now. I told him where I was. In the case of what happened at with DMACC, the only true radio guy in that group was DMACC.
Yes.
The other guys were ball players. And it's like watching a football cast or watching a lot of sports. There's one guy that I know that literally took off the helmet, walked in, sat down, and got it. And that was Dave Logan. Dave Logan, Irv Brown, was Dave's mentor. And Dave will tell you this. Dave was going to be like studying to sell insurance or something. And he had literally just removed his helmet. And he gets this phone call from Irv Brown, who was the godfather for a lot of people, and said,
absolutely,
get down here. And three guys I know, and I've said this many times, sat down in the seat and got it. Dave, of course, Allenberg, literally, he was a disbarred shirt salesman and shoe salesman, sat down in the room and got it. And Mike Rosen came in out of the business world, sat down and got it. Other than that, the rest of us had to work at it.
So is for a guy like DMACC, who's you know, radio guy to the core and has been for a very, very, very long time, how does, without going back to work in the industry, how would he take a thing like this and monetize it and make it work and be a way of making a living?
Well, that's the secret that you guys have to solve.
We have not solved it.
No, and
far from solving.
It's been like 12 years. We haven't solved it.
Well, look, but didn't Rogan get a...
Oh, he makes lots and lots and lots.
It's solvable, just not us. That's not us. We can't solve it.
And of course, Adam Carolla famously has made, you know, a fortune, an absolute fortune doing it. But that's, you know, it's a lot of consistency for one thing. They don't do shows once a week. Rogan's grinding every day.
Sure he is. But, you know, if you're going to do the job right, it's a Monday through Friday. It's 5 until 9. It's whatever your hours call for you to be there. He must have great bookers. Because I mentioned that the interview he did with Hogan, with Hulk Hogan, was devastatingly good. I mean, Hogan dropped his guard, and either Rogan got that out of him, or maybe that was his moment to talk.
Where his real talent lies, and I'm doing a bad job following his example right now, is in letting his guests talk.
No, I think he's great, and he's willing. And that was always the best part of it was... In the time I've been able to spend, lucky enough to have radio shows, I always wanted the ball. a lot of, we've talked about this, a lot of on-air guys won't touch a topic or certain topics. We were talking a little bit about this before it began. I wanted the ball. And I wanted, you know, like they said, well, this is, no, get him on the show. No, get her on the show. And 9 out of 10 times, well, say 5 out of 10 times, they might show up. But the fact that you can say, well, we asked them to come on. And sometimes they come on. But that's part of it.
How do you feel about Howard Stern? He's an excellent interviewer.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people are a little, you know, kind of like, he's kind of an asshole. But his interviews are fantastic.
Changed the business. My understanding from sources that he's drinking his own Kool-Aid now.
Mm.
And he's the COVID thing. He went in the house and didn't come out. And
yeah, he didn't. He stayed in there.
It just became bizarre. But early on, I mean, there are these guys that show up. Limbaugh in particular. Rush Limbaugh, everybody that has a mic in front of them across this country owes a tip of the hat to Rush Limbaugh. He changed the business. As same, and I got to do some work with Imus during the Ramses and became like shirt-tail friends, call on the phone friends. Imus was a brilliant guy, but look what happened to him. They hacked him. Stern, he went up on the bird. Smartest thing he could have ever done was go on the satellite. Now they can't come after him. The FCC can't crack his back. And they did get, they got the rest of the guys. I mean, and they're going to move on other stuff as well. But that was the smart thing that Stern did.
It's changed so much. Obviously, we're broadcasting to whoever, right? You can broadcast anywhere. You can say whatever you want. Put it on a website and maybe 10 people hear it, 10,000, whatever. Has that put a nail in the coffin of radio, do you think?
Radio put a nail in its own coffin.
Okay.
It didn't need you guys to do it. Radio has been so diminished, particularly in the last 3.5-4 years, has really taken some hits. But we talked about this. It's turned into angry white guy radio. And one angry white guy shift is over, replaced by another angry white guy. And they're all angry white guys. Well, if you're an angry white guy, you're
guilty.
Here's your audience.
Yeah, yeah. That audience is slowly going away too.
And I've turned this word is called narrowcasting. We'll pick the you and we'll but we broadcast. The idea is how wide can the net go, and then pull it in. And my job. I don't do a weekday, or I do a weekend show now, but the same thing is true with the weekend show. Every show is standalone. My job is to draw to me the largest amount of people that I can and sell them stuff. It's not that tough. And what a lot of people lose sight of is they're on a mission from God, or they're determined to change the outcome of an election, or, I mean, they're
Don good Quixote. Luck. Good
yeah,
luck.
Yeah. But my job is to, like, tomorrow's Wednesday, Thursday, I'm meeting with Larson's. I've sold skis on the air for 20 years for these guys. I'll probably become the voice of the Black Eyed Pea that Stefan's going away. So I have Monday lunch. That's my job. My job is to make money for the radio station, make money for my family. And a quick story. We're talking about pro wrestling, and one of the highlights of my life was to get to work in pro wrestling. True story. First time the guys ever take me on the road, and I'd done Denver a couple times, and they said, come on. We started, we did Casper, Wyoming, and we did Cheyenne, and we did Denver, and then we would do the Springs, Pueblo, Albuquerque, and I'd get off the tour and come back. So first night I've ever been at, we're Wednesday night, we're in Casper. And they don't have enough cops. And they don't call you a fan. They call you a mark. You know, because you're marking for... That's a carny thing. You're marking.
Yeah.
And there was a bunch of people there that had too much to drink. Stone marks. And they had what's called a screw job ending. And a screw job ending is when the heels beat the baby faces. So we had a big brawl. And there's not enough cops. They had no security. My tuxedo got ripped. I got punched. So we're walking. You know what those church, we used to call them the church vans. They were like, put 28 people in this big Ford van.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we had one. Well, the guys wanted to, and they always wanted to get high and drink. So I'm going to drive. And so we're walking across the parking lot. It's like 2:30 in the morning. Finally, we get out of there. And I'm carrying a tux, and I'm just happy. And I'm with Bobby Heenan, who was
Bobby the Brain. Yeah,
yeah. Such a gift to my life. He was just he had such an influence in my life. And I said, Brain, I said, what a great fucking night. He turns me around the parking lot. He takes me by the shoulders. And he was his biggest call. He was a big man. He just was a little guy compared to giant guys. He turns me around by the shoulders. He goes, did you get paid? And that's the night I understood the business.
Ah, yeah. Yes.
Did you get? I don't give a shit about you getting punched or you got the tux ripped.
Did
or,
you get paid?
Yeah.
Did you get paid?
A good night is only take you so far, right? It doesn't pay the rent.
Did you get paid? Because he said, and he taught me a lot of good lessons. He would say to me, don't ever ask another guy what he's making because he gets to ask you what you're making. And you're going to get pissed off at him or he's going to get pissed off at you. Never talk money with people. I mean, he had one rule after another rule that, and he taught them to me as a, I was doing radio, but I wasn't, hadn't blossomed into what it turned into, but I listened to those guys.
So how big were these events? Were they like?
Oh, they were huge. I mean, well, I didn't get to the WWE. I just did, I worked indirectly for Vern Gagne. And we did,
so like 4,000 or 5,000 people. Or was
yeah,
it that big?
Yeah, okay. You get a big night. Yeah, and
a few years ago, there's a independent pro wrestling.
Oh, I know
thing.
The guys.
Yeah, and they do it at the Jefferson County Fairgrounds.
Yeah. I know Matt real well.
And
yeah.
I took my son there, and I'm telling you, it was so much fun. Yeah. And what was so fun about these little indie places is you as an audience member, you're part of the show.
Oh.
I mean, like, you know it's fake, right? I mean, from that standpoint. Stating some obvious things here. But you pick a side and you're cheering and, like, you unconsciously become part of the show.
Absolutely.
And it's so fun.
The final part of that was that you learn from, we've all jocked and been disc jockeys. Well, one of my jobs was if it wasn't, because we always had a sellout. If we weren't sold out, I got to know the jocks, and I call a guy and say, I'll give you 20 pairs of tickets to give away on the air. You know the drill. And so we get free plugs and give away the tickets. And so the headliners, the guys who were putting the asses in the seats, they had a hunk of the action. So my job after it was over was to, because they were gonna, and I'd go to the bar and meet everybody, and I'd say, what was the number, 5,023. First question, how much of that was paper? And then how much was bullshit? How much of it's real money?
Sure.
And they embedded that in me. Like, we're not here, we're here to make money.
We do four quarters.
Good.
Like a football game. But we're gonna go a little longer because you're here. And we're going to make sure that we get your time. Well, I have a question for him real quick. If you can get
take your time. No, I'm good. I'm with you.
Sure. Okay. Well, I was just going to say, we've done this. We've gotten some like free fantasy football subscriptions. It's kind of just because we like doing it. We like being around each other. Yeah. We have day jobs. Yeah. Is that okay too, though?
Sure.
Is that okay too that you do something and you don't get, obviously that's your job. You want to get, you have your job. You want to get paid for that. We all know that well, but when you do something like this, it's almost like a glorified hobby.
But it's like, you're talking about Matt's pro wrestling league that he has out of Jeffco and they have it. 99% of those men and women wrestling for free.
Yeah. I knew the guy who worked in my industry.
Because they love it. They love doing it. Yeah.
They got a day job.
Yep.
It's like the Sultans of Swing.
Like roller derby girls.
Yeah.
Like,
bingo.
Like your daughter. Same. They're not making loads of money.
No. Remember the Sultans of Swing? He says, I forget his name. He's got a daytime job and he's doing it well. Come on, what's his name?
Dire Straits.
But I can't think of his
name. But he's got a job. Yeah. He's playing with the Sultans. Yeah. But no, I mean, I get that. And there's guys that buy time.
Yeah.
And they think that they're radio guys.
Sure.
Well, that's what Irv Brown was doing in the end, was buying time. They're called
brokered.
Well,
they were brokered. Brokered.
Yeah. But nobody, that guy could sell ice to an Eskimo. I mean, I ate at so many places because he told me to.
I can't tell you what
Hacienda,
a good man.
Colorado, brewery bar.
Oh, absolutely.
I can't tell you what a wonderful, wonderful man, and what a funeral. They had a public funeral and a private funeral. And they won't come along like Irv again for a long, long time.
Absolutely. He was awesome. Let's take a quick break. We'll get into the second quarter. Colin will have some more things to say, I think. So we'll be right back.
The return of the South Stands Denver Fancast is fueled by Cochino Taco, with locations in Old Town Arvada, Edgewater Marketplace, and on South Downing Street in Inglewood. Featuring mouth-watering Mexico City-style tacos, unbelievable appetizers, burritos, enchiladas, and the famous queso burger topped with American cheese, poblano chilies, jalapeno crema, fried jalapenos, and delectable melty queso. But let's not forget the best margaritas in town and a happy hour from 11 to 6 every single day. Tell them the South Stand sent you and ask for your crunchy beef tacos, Shaggy style. You'll thank us.
It's the question. It's the question, boy. It's the question. It's the question. Come on. The question. It's the question, boy.
Are the Broncos actually 0-3 since they scored two losses worth of points in week 2? Why does that defensive coordinator who allowed Sam Howell to hang 35 points on the Broncos look so damn familiar? When did the Broncos make the switch from the GOAT at quarterback to the scapegoat at quarterback? Are the Broncos feeling a little braggadocious since they'll never lose 100 games in a single season like the Rockies will? Are they looking forward to their October 29th game against the Chiefs because fans will have the Nuggets to distract them by then? Did the fans shit-can D-Mac because they no longer value the nerdy old bicycle shorts-wearing chubby guy demo? Where do I sign up to get a hand job from Lauren Boebert at the Buell Theater? Does Peter Boyle still think that John Ramsey killed JFK? Or was it Vagina DeJet? You have questions. We have answers. SouthStandsDenver.com, Colorado's finest internet sports talk since 1971.
I'd say you're going to get Peter in trouble, but I'm sure he's at the point in his career where he doesn't give a fuck.
Peter's been in plenty of trouble on his own. Yeah. He does not need my help.
Yeah, he doesn't need you.
No.
Colin's gotten a lot of people in trouble. Well,
okay, I got D-Mac in trouble.
We got D-Mac to get going, and he said a few things, and then he was kind of like, hey, can you guys edit that out? And we usually would never edit anything out. No. And he was like,
I got a panicked phone call on a Monday from D-Mac because we were talking about Les Shapiro. And rest in peace, Les. And he said some stuff about Les.
Honest things, if it's
honest
okay.
things it, from the heart.
Yeah.
And I got a pan. I was at the grocery store, and I got a panic call from D-Mac. He's like, "Listen, man, I need a favor."
But I had the file, so he had to tell me, and I had to go home and do it and find it and edit it out. So
and then we all got blocked by Les on Twitter.
Yeah, definitely. That for sure happened.
It all happened.
But I like pissing people off. It's fucking fun, right? It's the best.
Always is.
Yeah, nobody knows better than this guy.
He's the king of it. So we're following your footsteps. That's when coming back to the hooligan. One of the things that really kind of blasted things off. You remember Bill Husted?
Of course.
Yeah, and I wrote this unflattering thing about him being a blowhard.
I remember that.
and he actually put in the Rocky Mountain News about our thing, our small crappy publication.
When people come after you, it depends on who it is that's coming after you. And you always piss up. You never piss down.
Absolutely.
And so the idea is for Senator Fogbreath or Governor fill-in-the-blank to get assed up at you enough that their press secretary calls, or now we're playing big ball. But for, you know, somebody that puts a remark in a paper or something, you know, just drive by. Don't stop.
I'm going to let you get yourself in trouble again, because I have one question for you that I've wanted to ask you, and I've been saving it up for this opportunity, because I could have asked you privately.
No, I know.
Who killed JonBenet Ramsey?
Her mother.
Wow.
Whoa.
There it is. Holy shit.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, that's not a whodunit.
Well, it kind of feels like it's a whodunit.
No.
A little bit?
No. Matter of fact.
No, why? Why? What was her motivation?
Mother was a rager. Her mother had been
I've heard this. No, sure. This isn't like out of the blue. I've heard this.
So was it like an accident, you think?
Yeah. The murder weapons, the flashlight that was on the counter. And when, you know, the Boulder police blew it, but it's beyond scope.
Does John know?
Sure.
Interesting. Well, I guess it's a satisfactory answer.
It doesn't matter now.
She's 6 feet under. Here's something that happened in the aftermath. Remember, the DA is Alex Hunter. And he held a grand jury. And the grand jurors heard, you know, we'll never know what the grand jurors heard, but one of the grand jurors finally does break kayfabe, does break the silence, and comes out and says, we wanted to indict them both the mother and the father. This is when Paula Woodward's trying to write one of those bullshit books about how John's an innocent man, which he isn't. That stopped all of that. And this, whoever the grand juror was, and I don't know, said, we wanted to indict both John and Patsy. Patsy was still alive. And Alex Hunter wouldn't pull the pin. And so I was doing some writing for Bill Owens, and because I thought Bill was pretty brave on this one. And we're in the governor, I don't know if you guys have ever been in a mansion, but there's a boardroom off the governor's office. It's five times the length of this table. And Bill Owens, to his credit, he had everybody in that room. FBI, CIB, local DAs, local chiefs of police, everybody, and he's in the room. And he said, by a show of hands, how many of you believe that Patsy killed the little girl? Every hand went up. And these were DAs, these were investigators, these were murder dicks, they were the guys. And so, you know, did they get away with it? I was doing a TV show the night after. And they said, some kind of radio know-it-all, what do you want to know about this case that you don't know? And it was with Larry King, who was very pro-Ramsey. And I said, I'd like to know what Patsy Ramsey's dreams are like.
Yeah.
and Larry King got all assed up. And, you know, I wanted to know, what does Patsy dream? Because every night the devil has to come and dance in Patsy's dreams. She knows what she did.
Jeez, Colin, you really asked a good one there. That's a whole other thing.
Sports!
Yeah, sports. When we were talking about pissing people off, who are you going to piss off about that now? That's like, you know, so long ago. But
most of the people listening don't even know who JonBenet Ramsey is.
They do, actually. I mean, it's one of those like OJ, you know.
Yeah, it's always going to be.
Yeah, it's going to be.
It's always going to be in the cultural. Zeitgeist. Yeah, the zeitgeist.
Yeah,
so.
Thank you.
Talking about pissing people off, and, you know, we were talking about, like, you know, like the Broncos. Yeah. So D-Max, great example. Like, he'd tell it like it is, and he'd say, you know, he'd say some things if they were crappy. I'm sure he'd get that phone call
Patrick Smyth.
Yeah,
he probably got a lot of them.
But that's different. So if you piss off the governor, right, the governor can pitch a fit. But, like, if he tries to keep you away from something he's doing, that's even worse, right?
But I never got invited anyhow.
Sure. But I'm just saying, if, like a Denver Post reporter brought something up and they pitched a fit about it, if they barred them, it would be worse, right?
The best example I can give you is one of our best worst. It was Denver players and sugar.
Oh, yeah. This is good stuff.
And there was a prostitution ring, and they had four locations to serve you. And
hold on, let me get my note.
and the guy who
They had Michael Hancock in their role.
I was bootlegged the call sheet. And
Channel 7 covered that fucking story up.
The Post did.
And so did the Post.
So did Channel 9.
Until after the motherfucker was elected.
No. Well, even then. I mean, because he jammed up again with a policewoman. But that list of who was on that list, and it was an interesting thing that happened to me, is the guy who actually had sold Players and Sugar, but had created Players and Sugar, who doesn't even live in the U.S. anymore. And I get a phone call, and they said, beyond a corner, and it was on Grant Street, and like, I don't know, I forget what street, and they said, at like 4 o'clock, and there'll be a tall blonde woman, put her in your car. This is some James Bond bullshit. And she was there, and she took me to meet the guy. And he was wearing the Irish Rolex, and he was sitting at his house, and he had, and I never got to see the list. I never got to see, but I would talk to him, and I would mention, I'd come up with a name, and he would say, I am not, he said, I would not be surprised if that name were there. So the experience that I had was, I knew that Michael Hancock, but they didn't give a shit about this young black city councilman running for mayor. It was all about the power brokers and the ball players and the, you know, and everybody that went with that. So as a final, he beat Roy Romer's kid, Chris Romer, becomes the mayor. And what I believe, and although this guy that's mayor now is out, he's wrecking the city even further, but Michael Hancock took this city into the gutter.
No argument.
For anyone. No argument.
Well, we had him. I mean, we had him dead bang, and we called his phone. We got bootlegged this sheet, and I still have the sheet, and it said Michael City, and everything else was all blacked out, and a phone number on it. It was a cell phone number. We called it live on the air. Hi, this is Mike. Leave a message. And I met one of the prostitutes, and her name was Summers, what she called herself. And she and they put pictures, and they said, pick up. And they all picked him. But he was, what did they say in The Godfather? He was small potatoes. The big guys were on the line at the Post. I believe this, and I don't know this. Channel 9, Channel 7.
Saying, don't you dare.
Don't you. And then they came at me. And
so Hancock blocked me on Twitter. This is years ago. Because I mentioned Denver Players in a tweet. And 9 News did a story about, because this was because Donald Trump was blocking people. And so they wanted to know who has been blocked by local politicians. And so I said, hey, 9 News. Michael Hancock blocked me because I mentioned his prostitution scandal. And so they came and interviewed me right here in this room. I think it was Zelnicker, Jelnicker. So that's out there. That's on YouTube, where they interviewed me about being blocked by Michael Hancock because I couldn't help but point out his prostitution scandal.
Well, hold on. You wouldn't, just doing that, you wouldn't fear for your life. Did you fear for your life if you were poking around on that?
No, because, you know, in everything we went through the Allenberg murders. Mm-hmm. And my best friend I ever had in the business, and maybe best friend I ever had, was murdered. The thing about his murder, and I just went through this last 2.5 years with these Trump people, I found a guy in a hallway at the radio station, you know, and the threats on my family. Lee Larson, who is probably the most gifted radio mind that I've ever been around, Lee said, you know, and we dealt with those guys. We had to. We didn't know they were coming. But he said two things. One is that they never said a word. They just did it. And number two, they were, you know, that.
They never threatened Allenberg. They just showed up and killed him.
They targeted him. And
that was white supremacists.
Yes, and they killed him. And they killed him on Adams Street. So,
do you see a difference between those folks back, that was in what, the early 80s?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you see a difference between those folks and some of the folks that are running around now?
Not much.
No, not much, right? They're kind of the same. They're kind of cut from the same cloth.
And a lot of it gets generated, and talk radio shoves and pushes a lot of that stuff. And it's, I mean, it's First Amendment rights, but those people don't go away. They were in Germany in the 30s. They were someplace else.
Always going to happen.
I mean, it's reoccurring.
That larger point that I always try to ask people, do you think that do you think we're crazier now, or do we just see it in real time?
I've written about it and thought about it. Remember, the United States actually comes apart in the 1860s, American Civil War, comes apart. We've been apart in the 60s over Southeast Asia, Richard Nixon. In my lifetime, there's never been anything like this.
Really?
I don't think so.
Wow.
We're tribal now.
Is it the access to media that's really doing it? I mean, the guy that killed Alec Berg, he didn't have social media.
No.
But if he did, he could have ranted and been the crazy guy there and not acted it out.
Their spiritual guide was a guy named Richard Butler. And Butler had syndication.
Right.
From up in Idaho in his church. And no, he was. And then the other guy they had was a guy named Jack Moore, who was their philosophical historian. And they had access.
But everyone has a voice now. And you can instantaneously put it on social media.
And that's what I mean. Yeah. It's we see it happen in real time. People can just comment on it right away. Yeah. And it almost like it accelerates the madness.
Very much so.
I think, and like you said, there's always been weird fascists and Nazis. Yeah. But it's in your face 24/7.
Here's a better question that I'm going to use on the air, I think, one of these days. If the media never talked about coronavirus, would we have known that there was a sickness in our country or in the world?
I think so. I mean, a lot of people died.
I mean, enough people died, maybe. Yeah.
Don't know.
Yeah.
But if, would the country, and I don't have an answer for it. It's just a question.
Yeah.
Would we have reacted, closing schools and done all the things that?
Oh, I definitely think that it played a role in forcing an overreaction. Yeah. And I think when we look back on it, and, you know, COVID was real.
Sure.
But when we look back at it, I think we can pick out a lot of mistakes we made. And
oh, absolutely.
As a parent, I can say that I believe closing the schools, forcing the kids into remote classes, virtual classes, that is going to be, we're going to be paying that debt for a very, very long time. Because great. These kids, I've got a daughter who's 16 and will never. That was just such a traumatic experience. I would much rather she had had COVID than the social disease.
But it wasn't for the kids. It was for the teachers. I mean, that really was the reason why they did it, to protect the teachers. Was it an overreaction? Yeah, we can objectively look at it.
But it was all very new. And I think if it happened again, things would be a lot different. You know, they would be
for
like,
because
sure. You could be like, hey, look, I'm gonna take my chance. I'm going to go out to the bar. I'm going to wear a mask. They can wear a mask.
We have
whatever.
COVID outbreaks now.
Oh, yeah, it's still going on.
Do we care?
Yeah.
My brother is sick at home right now after being hospitalized for 3 days.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's terrible.
Nasty, nasty case of COVID. I mean, it's bad.
Well, going back to the original point, and we probably got, if we're doing about 20-minute quarters.
Okay,
probably good. Right. So I just think that now, you know, if everything, you know, from politics to things like COVID to sports, the reaction, like a guy, like they'll have a guy like do something in a game, like as a pitcher, he'll be pitching a no hitter. People will have already gone back into his Twitter timeline and they'll find racist tweets.
Sure.
And then it's all, by the time he's done with the no hitter, all of his racist tweets are up on the thing. And it's like, that's that fast.
That's witch hunting. And
it's crazy. But it's just like a madness that people have. I need to do this. I'm like, okay, maybe the guy's an asshole. Maybe he was like, you know, 14 when he said it. Who knows? It's at the speed of light.
We've always done that, though. We've always knocked people down from their pedestals.
Yeah, and now we do it so fast.
Now we do it in real time.
Wow. Yeah. It's a lot to the, yeah, it's very true.
It's it's crazy. Colin's had a lot of interactions with people on Twitter.
I have. You know, it's been less lately,
It has been less. You've been very good. Back in the day when we were doing this a lot, you know, we'd sit here, have a few beers, and I think Colin would have a few more, and then he'd get home, and we'd post the show, and then he'd be on there digging a hole.
Yeah, I did the same shit on Facebook too. Believe me. And I it's taken years to recover.
But now it comes from, and I actually just got done talking about this. Monday, when I had the Monday through Friday show, I called it the wall of hate and the text messaging. And now you can send things to people and you don't have to put your name on it.
No.
I had an incident after I had a blow up with there was a Trump's attorney, and they I believe that I was probably set up for this, but it doesn't, you know, so be it. But he hung up on me.
And while on air?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it began. And I won't tell you what happened, but I got one threat that I said, this is serious. And Steve Reams, who's the sheriff of Weld County, I got tons of, but I went to Steve, and the guy, idiotic guy, leaves his phone number on the bottom of the threat. And Steve is such a good guy. We ride motorcycles together, and I hope he watches this. So Steve said, let me go to work, so when I call this guy, it'll say Weld County Sheriff's Department. The guy was living in Oklahoma City, streaming the show. And there's a little bit of fallout. We found guys in the hallway. I heard from people that were like just friends of mine who then start sending me rotten messages. They're just people that I had in my phone, women, all this kind of stuff like that. And now it's proven that now this guy's under indictment in Georgia. He's been indicted. He's losing his law license in California. And no one called me up once and said, hey, Pete.
You were right.
I'm sorry. I haven't heard the I'm sorry.
That is always going to be the case. Yeah. So we're going to, you want to get into the halftime? We're in the halftime already. We can just keep, trust me, we can go all night.
It's halftime, so we're still going
to
win, right?
Yeah, we're up 21-3, yeah! Baby. Yeah, nothing could go wrong, right?
Not to the Commanders.
Yeah, that's awesome. Let's take a quick break, and we'll get back and do some sports right after this.
Sportique is where scooters come from and has been for 25 years. And now, Sportique is also the place for e-bikes. E-bikes from ScootStar, Genuine Scooter Company, and the Jackrabbit, the 20-mile-per-hour, 20-pound mini machine that fits comfortably in the trunk of your car. So, turn to Sportique for all of your scooter needs, parts, service, accessories, and apparel, and now e-bikes. Visit SportiqueScooters.com or their expansive showroom at 160 South Broadway in the shadow of downtown. Sportique, where scooters come from. Miscued sports.
You know, I'm using my laptop. Here we go. Sports! All right. Come on!
Hey.
It's good to have that back.
It's good.
It's good to have that back.
This is totally a sports show, and I'm going to ask Peter a sports thing here real quick. But I failed to mention that I have been keeping up with you because of your column in the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle.
I live in that delivery area,
and they deliver me one, and I always read it, and I always read what you have to say. And there was something you did, and I couldn't remember exactly what you said. But it was something where you made a joke about being bisexual.
Yeah.
And I went to my wife. I went, oh, my God, Peter Boyle's bisexual. Did you know this? And I didn't read the whole thing.
The tagline was, all the sex I get, I buy.
That's right. And then I read it, and I went, oh, wait, hold on. Yeah. Sorry, he's not bisexual. Yeah. And I read her the joke. But so
I'm an old man with an old man's life.
Yes.
Trust me, fellas, you're always going to pay. And somehow I think you already know that.
Colin does for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
But no, I enjoy that. I always read that every time I get it. Yeah. It's probably great. I was like writing a thing now and then. So I was like reading that. My sports thing was the Rockies. Yeah. Rockies been here since 1993. Horrendous franchise. We were talking about this last week. We said, we're not going to talk about the Rockies. And then we did. And Scott made the very, very good point that it's not that they don't spend. It's not that they don't try to make moves. They just don't know what the fuck they're doing. And that franchise is doomed. It's just doomed. You've seen them since the very beginning. I don't know if you're a huge baseball fan or not, but do you have any kind of opinion or insight on the Rockies? Will they ever be good?
My grandson should be sitting here right now and answering that question. I see.
What's the deal with them?
I think it's ownership.
Absolutely.
I mean, that they need to sell the team. It's interesting to see.
Here's the problem. They don't
need to sell
the team.
Oh, no, it's a cash cow.
Well, to win, they need to sell it.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I know, like, for instance, when the Pirates come to town, everybody I know that grew up in Pittsburgh goes to the game. I mean, we're in this really interesting part.
That's what they live on economically. Because we're a transplant town.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, so when the Pirates come to town or the Cubs come to town, everybody fills the seats and they sell a ton of beer.
Sure.
And it's why bother, right? Why bother? Because the MLB is not going to take the team away from them.
No.
They fill seats.
The interesting thing back to what we all do in radio is it's ratings. And if they're not winning, there's no ratings. And the same thing's true with the Denver Broncos, your Denver Broncos, that if they don't start to pull this thing out, people don't watch or don't listen.
Or don't come. And that's what would really piss Pat Bowlen off, is when he saw the attendance start to take a hit.
But I can't understand why a family couldn't get along for that kind of money. I get along with you guys for that kind of money.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's the same thing. I kind of see it's like General Motors is playing Ford Motor Company. You know, I have friends that, for instance, that are, and I was going to bounce this off of you guys, what happens if Oregon wins this weekend?
Oh, they're probably going to. They're favored by 25 points.
Then what happens?
Then CU falls out of the top 20.
Some shine comes off the whole thing.
That's what I'm asking. Yeah.
I mean,
but they'll still be – they're going to pack Folsom like crazy. I mean, the ratings for that game with CSU were amazing.
Yeah. Did CSU really win that game?
They sure should. No, CU won. But in two overtime.
No, I'm asking the question.
Yeah.
Did CSU really play a good game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel so. If CU took CSU to two overtimes.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a win.
Yeah.
That's absolutely a win for that program. And the eyeballs that they got on that program, they would never have gotten otherwise. I mean, at 2:30 in the morning in New York City on the East Coast, 2:30 in the morning, are 11 million people watching that game.
It's amazing. Yeah.
The shine would be off a little bit nationally, but here people are like they're dedicated to it like a jihad. It's like they're all in.
Or do they so want a winner?
Do the fans?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. This whole state
it's been a long time for them, so they definitely do. It's fantastic, and I'm not a huge Deion Sanders fan. I think he's kind of a jackass, but I love that he's upset the delicate balance of college football because all these people are upset with him, and it's like, this is entertainment,
that's
man.
What we opened the show with. Yeah. How do you get
to he sells the sizzle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he does.
For sure he does.
I watch
big
him.
Time. Yeah. So speaking of the Rockies and all the transplant fans, I had an idea, and this is it just popped into my head. This is a good time to mention it. So you open a restaurant right near Coors Field called the Hometown Cafe.
Yeah.
And you specialize in Chicago things and
Pittsburgh things.
And you draw those crowds when people come out to Coors Field. They go eat at the Hometown Cafe.
You could even,
and get their pierogi or
you
whatever.
You could even change out the banners as every week.
Yeah,
right?
Change your flags
electrically.
Out front.
You could change it electrically.
Yeah. Do like the hockey boards have those electronic ads.
Why don't they just go all the way and just do it at Coors Field and give
they pretty much have because you can when the Cubs are in town, they will sell old style beer.
Sure.
And because they're like, hey, Cubs fans, come on. That to me, I get it. It's money, right? Yeah, they want to make as much money as possible. That's why they have the team. But come on, that's ridiculous.
Well, let the visiting team bat last. I mean, like, do the whole thing.
Well, this is like their home stadium. If the Raiders are coming to Mile High and they're gonna sell meth.
Right? So and they changed the south stands to the black hole.
Some dead batteries throwing snowballs.
They would never do that because that
they have a brand. They have a product.
They have a brand, and the Rockies don't have a brand. So I just know a bunch of people that cover the Rockies. You probably do too, still. And they just, I feel sorry for them that they have to cover this sorry ass team.
Yeah.
But
did you ever get to meet Pat Bowlen?
I played golf with him once.
Did you really?
Yeah.
What about Elway?
I like John immensely. I haven't seen him in a while. My relationship with, and I'm not a sports guy, and it didn't matter to me. I liked John Elway a lot. I witnessed one thing we talked about. It's when the cameras aren't on, when nobody's in a room. And KOA had the exclusive rights to the training. And we'd always do the KHOW morning show in Cheyenne Frontier Days, and we'd always stop on the way up or on the way down. And I saw Elway after practice. He's all beat up and dirty and sweaty. And he rode in a golf cart. And these little kids came out. And they had footballs. And he stopped and he signed the footballs. Nobody watching. And he talked to these little kids. Pat Bowlen, I was against building the stadium. And my boss, Lee Larson, and a really wonderful man by the name of John Beek, who was general manager, And they said, do you play golf? And I said, no. And Lee said, yeah, you play golf. And I said,
you will today.
I play golf. We played at Cherry Hills Country Club. And I'm horrible. I mean, it's laughable to even think about it. But I walked 18 holes with Pat Bowlen. And I think he spoke to me twice. I thought he was a very shy guy. Very proud. I didn't think he was a bad guy at all. I just thought he was very, very shy. But I thought he was very smart. And he told me that one thing, that his mother was alive then, that she, the things that were written about them or said about them really troubled her, the mom. And I later skied with his brothers, and they were interesting characters. But I think Pat Bowlen was probably, according to everybody that I respect for, was a great owner.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's my experience.
And that's the thing. And we were, I was for sure, ranting about the new owners of the Broncos. Oh, and
they just fly in for the game.
Yeah, yeah. I was just like, I was like, these are just rich assholes. I go, they wanted to own a sports team, and they got it. They could afford it.
They're no more than that. They're going to take that whole valley and change it.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's all going to change, for sure.
The cards.
Yeah. Yeah. Elitch's is moving, and then they'll take the other side of the highway, too. The Broncos will be up by DIA.
Beyond that, I think what they'll do is they'll create a new world.
New sports entertainment district.
Absolutely.
Like they did in L.A.
Like Jerry Jones.
But is there a selective memory with people like Elway and Pat Bowlen. Because Pat, remember, we wore the fur coat and everybody was like, oh, rich asshole, right? But now, like, he's totally revered because he did end up being a good owner. Elway kind of the same way. Joe Williams was always tough on Elway.
Lived off of him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just ripped Elway. Yeah. And now somebody says something sideways about Elway, and it's like, well, how dare you? And it's like, oh, no. Elway was kind of like, I don't want to say he was a villain, but he was certainly was not universally accepted back in the day, right?
But my experience with him socially, I don't know anything about football, but socially, he was just sitting around a table. He was like a regular guy. And I met his dad. His dad's name was Jack.
Yeah.
And Jack Elway and John Beek were great friends. And one night we were at his home in Winter Park, and Jack Elway had a few of these, and he was a storyteller.
Mm.
He was a wonderful storyteller. And he for 3 or 4 hours, we just sat there, and he told sports stories. But they weren't about X's and O's. They were about off-field or on-field. And he was a really great guy. His name was Jack Elway, head coach, and John's dad, you know. And,
is these type of characters,
yeah.
if, you know, Elway's heyday was up until the late 90s, but when he came here, it was, what, 82, right? It was 82. Yeah, 82. So we're talking 82 up until the 90s. social, we're talking about social media being instantaneous. Some of these characters, would that have been a huge hindrance to some of their off-field activities?
You know, it's like when you're a kid and I was in love with baseball, in love with prize fighting, and you would hear the stories. And I think those stories are still there. They have to be. But it will take a time frame before, you know, the stories are told. But we were always in a position where we heard the stories, and I'm sure you guys hear the stories. And there were guys that you liked that you knew were
not great guys
and off the leash.
How do you rectify that then?
Well, I didn't do sports radio. So I have sports because we're talking about sports. When it came to politics, we just mentioned in the last segment, the mayor.
Yeah.
We did the story on the governor, Roy Romer. Patty Calhoun breaks the story on Roy Romer with a long-going affair with his chief of staff, the greatest name in politics, B.J. Thornberry. And Patricia had the heart to do that story. We did it. And so there's a lot of people that really didn't want you to do that story. But it's like the DIA deals and the land deals and the scams. And,
oh, God.
I mean, that was incredible. It was a gift. If you were more than willing to take the chance and then not be invited anywhere or have people turn their backs when you walked in the room, which was kind of my experience, but what did I care?
Again, as we stopped, who cares, right?
Do you think, based on your history and your ear to the ground, did Kathy Sabin and John Elway have a thing that you're aware of?
First I heard of that.
Damn it.
He's been masturbating to this for years.
Wow. No, you know, I hear everything too. I'm like,
well, if you hear everything and you never heard
then
it probably isn't a thing.
I heard a lot of other stuff.
He's been beating the drum and beating something else to that for a wild time, and now he can't do it anymore.
Actually, she's a really nice woman.
I'm sure she is. Yeah, she's just beautiful. Even at her advanced age,
so
she's gorgeous.
I've got some insight on this one.
Oh no!
Yeah, I know a guy who dated Janet Elway after they split.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He says 100% take it to the bank that happens. 100%.
Wow. Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
Colin, you're back in business.
You know, back in business. So
I know a guy who knows a guy.
This sounds like a deal on the street when I'm growing up. I know a guy that knows a guy.
Yeah,
a guy,
absolutely.
But hey, he's very confident about all of these things.
It's pretty much time for the fourth quarter.
Already?
Well, yeah, we're gonna bring it home. We're gonna talk a little Broncos, but we're gonna try to pick our guest brain on some things. So
we gotta talk some Bobert too.
Oh yeah, we gotta talk that. I gotta say my mother-in-law went to see that show like 2 days later, and I was like, another incident gonna happen. So I was hoping it didn't go down. But let's talk about all that. When we come back right after this.
Don't yet.
Want to do one for like mutiny or something? You can whip a mutiny out.
Sure, I could. Yeah, I could whip a mutiny out.
Let's do that.
I'm recording, so go for it.
If you want to go to your anarchist bookstore and
you're obviously longtime friends with Matt.
Very
and
close.
Mutiny.
Yeah.
How do you two politically get along?
We don't discuss it.
You just don't discuss it. You guys just leave it out.
We just focus on our friendship.
That's great. That's awesome.
Yep. It's the only way. I will not spend a fucking dime there.
It's not your scene. I get it.
It's not my scene. But, you know, I'm about to do a read for him starting right now. Mutiny Information Cafe is the place to go for used books, new graphic novels, used records, delicious coffee. They make iced coffee with ice cubes made out of coffee. Now, that's just smart, folks. That's just good thinking. So go in there, see Matt and Jim right there on South Broadway, just north of Sportique Scooters, I might add. And tell them the South Stand sent you, won't you?
All right.
All right.
Do you know this, Peter?
Well, it's 1969, okay. Walk across the USA.
I
probably,
do.
You probably heard it.
Me and you.
Tell me.
This is Iggy and the Stooges.
There you go.
1969. Recorded Iggy in
Pop.
1969. Yeah, Iggy Pop. Yep.
Wow. Cool pick.
You know, I just saw him in concert.
Did you?
In California. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, you went to the whole Goth Fest thing.
Yeah, I went to the Goth Fest.
Nice. Iggy's got to be at least 77. My age. Right?
He's got to be.
Yeah, he's got to be.
He's 77. That's exactly how old he is.
Yeah, yeah.
And that motherfucker can go off.
He moves, man. He can move.
Yeah, he was wild. Look at Susie and the Banshees, too.
Yeah, oh, nice.
Look at Mick Jagger.
That was my first club show I ever saw, Susie Sue.
Oh, wow.
What did they say? They said they were like, they had Mick Jagger and Mitch McConnell.
There you are.
Mitch McConnell, and they were like, hey, these guys are the same age.
Same 81.
look what sex, drugs, and rock and roll did for one of them.
You know it.
But we don't know. We don't know if Mitch might have had a lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll too.
I'm
we're not
sure he did, but kind of on the DL.
Yeah, it wasn't publicized as much as Mitch.
That's what guys guys like Peter are there to uncover.
Mitch looks better than Keith Richards. There's that.
Yeah, but Keith Richards is probably in better shape.
Yeah, he probably is.
But he looks better.
So I mean, you know, obviously the Rolling Stones are a sex, drugs, and rock and roll success story. There's a lot of non-success stories, right?
Just the entertainment in and of itself, and that's where you guys are working. It's the devil, you know. It just is such a part of it that if you don't watch your step,
so many people have probably fallen off, died, done whatever for right. You've probably known tons, and it's a crazy thing because us in our 50s, like this was the time where all of a sudden these people that we've kind of hung around with and partied with all this time. They seem all of a sudden that's when it starts to kick in, right? Yeah. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, this guy died or this guy's had some problems. Yeah. And it's kind of like you can only get so many years before it catches up to you.
Yeah, it's all catching up, which reminds me, you and I have something in common, which I haven't mentioned to you. CHF. Congestive heart failure.
Yeah, I just went through it.
Yeah, I went through I have it. I mean, once you have it, you have it.
Yeah.
Well, most of us will get it eventually, but I have it at age 51. And I went into a really bad in June and went through really bad AFib, like really bad. Ended up in the emergency room. It was horrible. So
all of that.
Yeah, and I have that in common. And then, but I'm 30 fucking years younger than you.
Yeah, when I was your age. No, it's part of it. It's, you know, it's going to catch up at a certain age and you can
You lived pretty hard. Right?
Yeah.
In your 30s and 40s?
I got sober 37 years ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I wasn't aware it'd been that long. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Been sober 30.
And why did you go down that road?
I just got done having lunch with somebody trying to explain this. It was following Alan Berg's murder. And Alan was the first truly sober person I ever knew. His disease, alcoholism, and my disease, but his disease... He was an attorney in Chicago, and a very good one. But his behavior eventually got him disbarred. He tells a story that he was court-appointed on a murder beef. He remembers leaving his office on a Friday. He woke up Monday in St. Louis with a hooker.
Oh.
And that was the last straw. And he got disbarred, and he came out here, and he gained his sobriety. He had a shirt store, and he had a shoe store, and a guy... came in who was a talk show host at KWBZ and dupes him and says, you know, man, you're in the wrong business. You could come and do radio. And so favorite Berg story, I'm doing the morning show with Bob Lee. It's a hit show in KLEK. Elvis died.
Mm.
And grown men, I'm answering the phone, and grown men are calling up crying. You know, he's gone. Berg goes on the air and says the guy couldn't carry a tune. And that's going the other way, right? and he lights it up. But he was sober, and he was the first real sober person I knew, and I was so out of control. And after his death, it was just a question of time. That I mean, I was at least relatively smart enough to understand that I was going to die. And that's what we're talking about, when you know about certain things inside of you, there's a voice that says, okay, keep it up. Right. And you know the voice.
So were you that bad? I mean, yeah. were you just up against it? Yeah.
No, I was that bad. And that bad and more.
So did you use 12 steps?
I went
or
into.
Did you go another way?
I actually, that's kind of way away from what's public, but I, in essence, turned myself in to two really great physicians. And then, I'll tell you a story. And so a guy, I won't use Kent, because, you know, the other A is anonymous and you can't use, and it isn't polite.
Of course.
But I was afraid to go to a meeting, and I was afraid to stand up because I was Peter Boyles, you know. And so these guys took me. This is a true story. They said, okay, we'll go to Colorado Springs to the Air Force Academy to the Officers Club. And I'll tell you how screwed up I was. And I remember we went in a Lincoln. I remember who was in the front seat, who was in the back seat with me holding my hand. It was a woman friend. And I always told the story about her being with me, holding my hand, going to Colorado Springs to the O Club. 3 years ago, she takes me aside. She said, Peter, I wasn't in that car. True story.
Wow.
And so that was the first time I kind of remember standing up, and they say, you know, copping to it, you know, I'm alcoholic. And but this one man was so instrumental in my life, and it was, and he's a significant guy, but it's nobody's business. But he took me and he said, and this is what I've told other people, there's only three places where guys like me end up, and you look around you and you'll know that this is true. We end up, they say, in an institution, which could be a hospital or a jail cell. We end up on a morgue slab, or we end up in a meeting. And so many brilliant, talented men and women that I've known for the 40-plus years I've been in this business went on the morgue slab. Some of them went to jail. And it didn't, that's the great sadness.
And I could only assume that in your industry, alcoholism is prevalent.
I think there's something about creative people. And it's we're not going
for
to.
Sure.
Yeah, but there is something about this business. And I used to think of it as a shit magnet, that it would just pull all of it. But there's something about these brilliant, gifted people that I've had the pleasure of, at least I'm saying, hey, Peter, how are you? So flawed. And I think that I'm not a big believer in, I'm not a religious fellow, but if the universe gives you this, it's going to take that.
Sure.
And I started to drink when I was 13.
Mm.
And, but I've met all of these wonderful, I mean, a lot of writers and actors and a lot of athletes that somehow you carry that disease. And I've just got done talking about it to somebody. It's important. I said, my disease, and think of it as a disease, and you got a chance. My disease wants to kill me.
I am an alcoholic. I'm going to stand on the table right now and say that. I am. And I've been treated for such. This is a little over disclosure. A little personal disclosure.
It's all right. We're getting to the core of it.
I never have felt like my disease was going to kill me.
It will.
Because, well, ultimately, I will die probably sooner than I otherwise would.
Huh?
But it doesn't impact me on a day-to-day basis. Although, don't tell my cardiologist that.
Now, someone who's gone through it for all these years is going to tell you you're full of shit.
Well, no, right? I mean, and let me tell me two things. One is this. He's got a beer in his hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Never talk to somebody about drinking when they're drinking. That's number one rule. Number two is it's an individual call.
Sure.
And when I hear people say, well, da-da-da-da-da-da is an alcoholic, I said, that's not up to you. When it was up to me, and like I said, I It was such a bizarre story when that woman had to say to me, Peter, I wasn't with you. I told that story for 35 years. And she was in the back seat holding my hand, and I was shaking like a... And she said, no, I wasn't in the car. And I went, wow. So that's, you know, but it's a disease. If you treat it like a disease, you have a chance. If you treat it like it's a behavior, you'll lose every time. Like the city of Denver, this new mayor, if you thought, is it possible to get a worse mayor than Michael Hancock? The answer is yes.
That's shocking.
You just got him.
That's shocking.
You just got him.
And why?
What he's doing with this homeless stuff. I mean, it's just like you want these people will take from you whatever you have to give and want more.
Seems like a Band-Aid, right?
It's senseless. You know, it's like, and there was a guy by the name of Bob Cote, the late, great Bob Cote, that started Step 13.
Step 13.
Bobby knew. I mean, I was with Bob so many times. I was a board member and still remain emeritus on their board. And these parents would come in, and they had the 30-year-old kid living in the basement. And Bob would say, do you want to help them? Yes, we do. Don't help them. And they couldn't understand that, the tough love, like, anytime you want to feed these people, give them someplace to stay, medical care, they're not going to quit.
There was just this last weekend down in lower downtown on what they call Whiskey Row.
Yeah.
There was a shooting into a crowd, and the fella who they haven't caught a fella yet. They don't necessarily have a suspect, but the shooting came from one of the encampments downtown. And now they're running prostitution rings.
Sure. And they had a bar going.
But here's what the point I was going to make. Yeah. The last mayor, I never heard him mention at all. Never seemed to do anything about it, right? So even though you might go, well, this is kind of bullshit. Maybe this isn't going to probably work. At least he'll try something, and maybe when it fails miserably.
But it's already failed in other cities.
Oh, yeah, sure, for sure. But once it fails, then you can say, hey, it failed, try something else.
Well, and
My point is that it was never mentioned the whole time Hancock.
I agree with that.
It was never mentioned.
But Hancock, remember, let me tell you something.
At least he swept.
This is my take on the current mayor. You know what he's really doing? Running for governor.
And then president.
That's all. Yeah. That's all they're doing, right?
Because Polis is running. Watch. I mean, Jared Polis, by the way, is the smartest, most gifted politician the state of Colorado has. He's maybe going to step up and run for the big chair. This guy, who is giving away and going to wreck the city even further, it doesn't work. It didn't work in Philly. It doesn't work.
Housing first does not work.
It doesn't.
No. And I will give Michael Johnston credit for this much. He's out there. He's available.
That's what I'm saying. It'll fall on its face, but at least he's saying, let's try this first.
And I got to meet him and shake his hand and talk to him and express my distaste for what he's doing one-on-one. And that I have to give him credit for. He's done so far, I believe, 12 town hall meetings in various parts of town, mostly at churches.
It's fine, but politicians, by their very nature, are total scumbags, right? Is that a fair assessment, or is that unfair?
7 out of 10.
Okay, that's a pretty good percentage.
Yeah.
And granted, there's a few people who you see them and you go, okay, that person seems like they give a shit. They're trying something. Most of them, they're just trying to get the next grift on. Right?
I hope that you're right and that he tries this, it doesn't work, and then he tries something else.
Got to keep trying,
but.
Colin and I are going to release a treatise soon. We're going to get together. We're going to write, because Colin, both of us see it as a major issue. We might come from it from different viewpoints, but we're going to write something that's going to be the definitive guide on how to cure it. I believe we're going to come together and do that soon, aren't we?
I would love that.
Okay, good.
Remember,
because I live this.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah
I live you, yeah, this on I a daily basis.
I don't. You have to see it every day.
Yes, the fentanyl crisis, the overdosing, the mental illness, schizophrenia. These things are on my doorstep. I live them every day. Just down the street, the bus stop at the corner of Alameda and Broadway is a lightning rod for drug activity. There's all kinds of dealing going on there, and there's all kinds of pain and human misery and a lack of dignity, and those things are disturbing, and I would love to find some common ground, and I think about it all the fucking time. I have put so much energy, and I don't know what the answers are.
Historically, fentanyl, you know, is coming from China.
Via Mexico.
We and the British did that to the Chinese. It was called the Opium Wars. The Chinese have very long memories. They're seeing this as in reverse to what Western powers did to them. A lot of the great fortunes in this country were built in the opium business and the slave trade. And so we collectively brought opium to China during the time of the last Mandarins. It lives in China until the Maoists come. And I'm by no ways a Maoist, but so Mao comes up with a concept called the Barefoot Doctors and the Red Army. And they go into the little villages and they find the opium smokers. And they say, we'll be back. If you're still smoking opium, when we come back, we're going to kill you. There's not a problem today. And then that's harsh. It was Mao. But now as they're muling fentanyl into this country, it's just to get even.
I firmly believe that and what the internet, like the propaganda on the internet, has been outside influences too. And I think that everybody else saw an opening and they said, look at these dumbass Americans. Yeah. Let's fuck them up.
Look
and
at the money.
Yeah. And it's all come from different ways. And I think it's been a, maybe not coordinated, but it's certainly been directed at people in this country.
If there weren't customers for that drug, it would stack up, and it doesn't.
Yep.
It just flows. And perhaps, you know, and my cynical part of me is maybe there just isn't. Maybe there's myself being totally flawed. What was it about me? And I think it was genetic predisposition, cultural predisposition. I can give you a thousand excuses or readinesses for the disease that I carry within me. But it's real. And when these guys are junkies, I went up and lived in Vancouver on the street for 3 days, Stephen Tubbs, myself, and Mark Crowley.
Oh, that's right.
Because that's where they have what they want to bring here. You can shoot. It was a vision of hell. I mean, and I'm not a tough guy, but I've been in some bad places. I haven't seen anything like that. I mean, that was like junkies.
And this is where the needle exchange is.
No, not a needle exchange. You can legally shoot. And you know, and there are elected Democrats here at Colfax and Broadway that want to bring that here. This isn't needle exchange. This is, you can shoot dope.
Harm reduction, they call it.
I went in one of these places. We finally got in. And I watched it. And there's an alley behind it. And this one guy came up to me and he's going to be a hard guy. And he said, you want to come out in the alley? I was sure. He said, you got a watch on. I said, no. He said, take those rings off. I said, all right. Because you didn't know what was in the alley. Went out in the alley. And it was like this vision of hell. And it's just up and down the alley. There's junkies lenders, junkies in the street. Everybody's selling hot merchandise. And the cops don't do anything. Cops stand there and they watch it.
It's like a futuristic, like it's horrible, like sci-fi movie.
It's horrible. Yeah. And they want to bring that here. In Vancouver now it's spread. And now they have drugs and vending machines.
And there's elements here. I mean, even taking light rail by our house. Oh. I mean, it's
the mugger mover.
Whenever I go to light rail, it's like three different huddles of people just with coats over their heads and just billows of smoke coming out. And it ain't weed.
No.
It's not weed.
But
they're like, and I don't know, like, why do we have the only public train I've ever seen where you don't have to pay to take it?
Well, because everybody stayed away from it for that reason.
But, even like every single one, like Paris, New York, Chicago, even Las Vegas, London, you have to pay to get into the station.
RTD is a failure. The whole thing is a failure.
It's
whether it's the train to the plane or whether it's the buses or whatever it is, it's a failure.
Like not having turnstiles to get into it is such an issue.
Let's talk about something positive, the Denver Broncos. We're going to have to wrap it up soon. I could sit here all fucking night and talk about that. But
dude, what a golden opportunity they had. They had the Raiders at home, followed by the Washington Commanders at home. Everybody else in the division has lost games. All they had to do was beat the easiest teams on their schedule, and they are 2-0 and atop of the AFC West. And instead, they're 0-2 and in the basement. Kansas City's lost. San Diego's lost twice now. Or LA, the LA Chargers. And the Raiders have one win, and it's against them. I mean, that was there for the taking. And it's just un-fucking believable that we're stand here today at 0-2. I cannot fucking believe it.
This is a question for Peter. Do the Broncos, even though they're horrible right now, do they still hold that same weight that they've had all the time? Wow. Do you think, or do you think maybe because we've had so many different people here, it's diluted a bit?
That's a, you know, I don't pay much attention. I have my grandson. Really, he should be sitting here talking sports with you guys because I'm.
Well, we have him, and he can answer those.
But he would probably have a take on it. What I think is interesting is and I know some people at KOA. The attention's really on CU.
Mm.
I mean, that's
and the Nuggets.
And the Nuggets, but that season has. I like what you said in the open, but if. What happens? Better question, what happens if they can't get past Oregon? And does the shine come off? And
I mean, they barely beat CSU. They should have destroyed CSU.
They were favored by 23.
They were 24. Yeah. I know this because I put 40 on the cover and 40 on the win. Oh, my God. I almost won so much money. I almost made about $700.
But everybody.
But I broke even.
Yeah, you take the blowtorch, KOA. Yeah. It has the Rockies, it has the CU Buffs, and it has the Broncos. Who do you think their comer is right now?
Yeah, CU. For CU. Sure. Until they lose in Oregon. We'll see.
Well, but you don't. But the point of it is that gave them life. Yeah. Because I think, what do I know? But, you know, the ratings weren't great. And as we've all talked about, ratings equals revenue.
Right.
Revenue equals ratings. And if you don't have the numbers, nobody's going to buy. And I know that there was a season back a few years ago that you don't become a sponsor. You're really kind of an underwriter of the broadcast. There were major sponsors in the Front Range that wanted their money back because your Denver Broncos were not. And they consider, you know, you get the monthlies, you get the weeklies, you get the overnights. Nielsen gets the overnights. They can see if there's nobody there. But you told me. Well, back to the wall. They know.
When the owners fly in for the next game, they're going to be told that. And they're going to be like, what?
They fly in the morning and they leave that afternoon.
You know what's crazy? Russell Wilson is such a huge disappointment, or so we think.
Yeah.
But he's in the top five in quarterback rating.
Oh, yeah.
His yardage is good. Touchdowns are good. I cannot believe it's a huge mess.
I guess what I'm getting at is that they're always like the cultural cornerstone, mm-hmm. the sports cultural always. Cornerstone of Denver, Colorado in general. Yep. And I don't think they'll ever not be, because there's a lot of people like I didn't go to CU. I don't really care about CU. There's a lot of people like that, but everybody likes the Broncos. But the problem is, I think as they continue to suck, that support's going to erode. And as people have like kids, then normally they'd go, oh, I want my kid to be a Bronco fan. They might be like, maybe you go root for somebody else. Maybe that erodes,
like the Nuggets, for example.
Exactly. Well, like true. The Rockies, you know, there's a bunch of people who like, maybe they have a spouse who's a transplant and they're like, yeah, why don't you root for the Cubs? The Rockies suck. And then they're never going to get that fan base to come up like the Broncos.
You know who
really
has it? The Green Bay Packers.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not just talking about fandom. I'm not talking about sports. But there are three or four generations of people that have lived in Colorado that are Packers fans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It's like, you know.
I mean, the city owns the team. It's actually a cool story they have. I grew up in Chicago, so I hate the Packers. It's a thing. but we watched the CU-CSU game in Pueblo. We were in Pueblo this weekend.
Pueblo. I'm sorry.
Puebla, as some of the locals call it. Thank you. Appreciate that. But people who did not go to college, they are huge CU fans. Yeah. And we were like the lone CSU people in there. And given it to us, and they certainly did not go to CSU.
No, what do they call them? Nebraska is famous. I've read this. they call them artificial alumni. Because there's nothing else.
You got to pick a team, right?
Well, but if you Lincoln, didn't go to college. There's no big pro sports right. teams. And so it was Go Big Red.
Right.
And so these
big are in Nebraska.
Big BBR, baby.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Farmers that never took a 101 English class, and they're huge Nebraska fans. Because it's what you say.
Yeah, and we were really respectful through the whole thing when we all thought CSU was going to win. And then all of a sudden they tied it up, and they were like giving it to us. And then my wife is like, well, we actually went to CSU.
Don't tell them that.
And then what did they say?
All right, college boy.
Silence after that.
Real quick, and then we got to wrap it up. We'll get Peter out of here. He's got another podcast to do. He's a big podcaster now.
I broke my cherry.
That's
here,
right. Man. That's hey. Awesome. Hey. We're happy to have helped. Yeah. Somebody had said that CU is now a black America's college team. And I was like, that's cool. And I was like, have they ever been to Boulder? Because I get it with Dion and his family and everybody.
Little Wayne was here and Kawhi Leonard.
It's
and
awesome.
Roxy and yeah, Rock. Rock and Kyle Lowry.
And if black America wants to get behind a college team, I'm all for it. Just know that Boulder... It might not be that amenable to you if you showed up there.
Well, you know, Lil Wayne loves the weed, I think. Yeah, so
before we get out of here, I've got one last thing I want to do.
Okay.
And this is a treat for Peter. I'm going to do an impression.
Okay.
You're going to know who this is. This is my impression. All right.
This is a Trump impression?
So proud of my radio home in the Rocky Mountain West, the 50,000 watt. Blowtorch 850 KOA. Paul Harvey. Every day.
Yes.
Every day.
Then you have to end it with good day.
Yeah. Paul Harvey.
he had this little spot that happened between other commercials. He'd
That's
say,
a great story on if you got a second
oh, yeah.
on how things are lost. In the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and the first part of the 60s. Paul Harvey was a guaranteed ratings getter, would appear at high noon, 12 o'clock. The demo died. Everybody that loved Paul Harvey went seriously and big casino. So all of a sudden, Paul's like talking to himself, demanding the same amount of money, but his ratings are gone because his demo moved on. It's what you guys have talked about for as long as we've been sitting here. Revenue is ratings. Ratings is revenue. It's all in demos. It's about who's listening to what you do, watching what you do, watching those games, listening to Donald Trump or whatever happens. It's all numbers. It took me a long time to figure that out.
That's right. It's all moving. It's going to constantly be moving.
For the rest of the story.
That was Paul Harvey.
That's right. Yeah. Well, this has been awesome.
It was fun, guys.
I kept going, I got to get home and put this on the internet. I'm like, we can sit here and talk all night.
Sure.
It's fantastic, Peter. You've always been super kind. We appreciate your time to come in and talk to us. It's been good. Like I said, we've got dozens of other topics we could get to, but you know, there's only so much space on the internet. So we have to, you know, make sure.
Well, Ante, let me do this. If I do what I want to do, come and do my YouTube show with me, the three of you.
Listen, you heard him. He's good, isn't he? He's fantastic. He's got a great voice.
He can sell.
He's got a great voice.
I tell you what.
He always had a future.
I'll have you guys on before Thanksgiving.
Deal. That sounds good. It's awesome. Thank you so much, sir. It's been a pleasure. Baseball. That's Peter Boyles, everybody.
The one and only?
Yeah. You've got a Saturday show. Tell about your Saturday show real quick.
Well, I do a 9 to noon on 710 KNUS. I think I'm trying to get Sandy and Joe the Hitman Williams on to talk sports.
Nice.
This
good,
Saturday.
Yeah, good. Now you're primed. You're ready to get him on.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Excellent.
Prime.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate you being on here with us. This has been great. South Stands Denver Fancast. We're back at it. Second show in a row. Can we do a third? We'll find out next week, baby.
Stay tuned.
All right. Until next time. Adios.
We love you.